Welcome to the National Library of Scotland's Behind the Lines, Personal Stories of the First World War exhibition. In this audio tour, curators Jan Usher and Alison Metcalf will highlight key sections of the exhibition to give you a glimpse of some of the topics covered. First, let's listen to Jan Usher introduce the exhibition and describe the countdown to war.
The exhibition is just a window into the diverse wartime experiences of a variety of individuals, from soldiers, nurses at the front, to grieving parents and conscientious objectors to the general. And it's full of letters, diaries, sketches and photographs, which really offer a link to the lives of those on who the war had such an immediate and enormous impact. The pre-war world was opening up as never before. Driven by industrial development, technological advancement, scientific discoveries and exploration, cinema and the popular press increased leisure time generated a thirst for travel and adventure. This was a golden age for the wealthy, and it contrasted starkly with the living conditions of the poor. Strikes and riots and anarchist bombs marked a struggle for social reform, which also witnessed the rise of the Labour Party and the suffragette movement. There was agitation for home rule in Ireland and Scotland, and this mirrored the growth of nationalist sentiments across the European empires and dominions. These simmering threats to the old order and fears of Germany's military ambitions led to shifts in geopolitical alliances.
Now let's hear Alison Metcalf describe the next section of the exhibition, which looks at recruitment and active service.
At the outbreak of war, there was already a small standing army for Great Britain, and almost immediately after war was declared, Lord Kitchener made a call for volunteers, hence the recruitment posters that we see hanging above us. Some of these men were already on active military service in training at camps across the UK. There is a letter here from Nigel Trotter, who was stationed at Glencorse Barracks, and the letters describe his feelings and experiences in the days running up to war, and he writes, "We've got our marching orders and are expecting mobilisation orders at any moment. But of course it's impossible to guess how things will pan out." And I think that's just an illustration of just the uncertainty at the time of the outbreak of war as to whether or not war would eventually come. We're now standing in the active service section of the exhibition. It's quite a dark space with trench-like features to it, with planks and sandbags around the edges. We've tried here to look at the experiences beyond just what you would expect from the First World War of the Western Front, mud and trenches. We do have a case of material with letters and diaries and photographs from the Western Front. We're also looking at morale at the Western Front, things like religion, reading, sketching, photography, and different ways that men would spend their time. We're also looking at arenas like Gallipoli, Salonika, and East Africa, because we have letters and diaries from our collection relating to those areas. There's a case of material relating to Field Marshal Haig. The library has his diary and other papers from the First World War, and you'll see pages from the diary throughout the exhibition. There's also a case relating to women's experiences at the front during the war, which focuses on nurses in nursing services such as the Scottish Women's Hospitals and the First Aid Nursing Yeomanry.
Some of the most poignant items in the exhibition are the personal letters from active servicemen. In this extract, we hear Robert Dunlop Smith's letter to his father. Smith was serving with the 33rd Punjabis of the British Indian Army in German East Africa.
"This campaign seems to be very short of medical requirements. It was with the greatest difficulty I got a sub-assistant surgeon to look after 300 men. Both men and medicines appear to be very short, and yet one hears of doctors by the dozens waiting in Bombay for a job. This is no exaggeration. A doctor, RAMC, came out in the boat here with us. He had been sent from home to India, had done nothing there for 2 months, and had then been sent here to take wounded and sick back to India. To have these men doing nothing when they are really badly required seems a sin. But then what can you expect when the campaign is over? Over indeed. Maybe in its third and last phase, but over? Enough said."
We then move on to look at the experience of those working in the Royal Naval Air Service and the Royal Flying Corps, which were to merge in 1918 into the Royal Air Force. And finally, we have a case relating to those working in the Navy. This features the Dixon brothers, two boys from Edinburgh, 16 and 18, at the Battle of Jutland, who both served at the Battle of Jutland, and the younger brother was killed when his ship HMS Queen Mary was sunk.
It was also difficult to escape the impact of the war back home in Scotland. Listen to Alison and Jan describe what the next section covers.
So, principally here we're looking at the experiences of members of families, injured servicemen home, receiving treatment in hospital, those working the munitions industry to keep the front supplied, and also enemy aliens who were interned in Scotland and also away in Germany. One group of individuals that we have been able to feature in the exhibition are conscientious objectors. These are men who appealed against being conscripted from 1916 onwards, and many of them spent time in prison during the war. One of these men is Thomas Hannan, and in front of us we've got a number of his postcards that he sent to his son. There's also a standard letter to his wife basically confirming that he's in good health and that he's been moved to Dartmoor Prison. But there's also a letter to his father, which is really a very touching letter because it explains to his father how he's disappointed in his father's attitude towards his anti-war stance and how he hopes that his father will be reconciled with him at some point in the future and that his father will come to understand that he's standing up for what he believes in, basically so that his son will follow his example later in life.
The home front section also features some well-known figures such as John Buchan, who is better known as a writer. He worked as director of information during the war, and he helped with propaganda to get, firstly, the foreign press and foreign public opinion on side for the war, and then gradually, as casualties increased, he concentrated on the opinion of the public at home and directed his efforts towards that. John Buchan's diplomatic passport, which, as you can imagine, is very full of stamps back and forward to France and Belgium on secret and confidential government business. And we also feature some of his histories of the Battle of the Somme and the Battle of Jutland, which have been translated into foreign languages for dissemination abroad. The home front section also features John McLean, who's the well-known Glasgow revolutionary socialist who was imprisoned several times for his anti-war stance. And we feature a letter from him where he voices his concern that his food is being poisoned in prison, and it's an appeal to his wife to bring food from outside to him.
There are a selection of films throughout the exhibition. I'm standing in front of one in the home front at the moment, which shows waving crowds who are all gathered in Dundee and other cities across Scotland, who are there to donate to Julie and the Tank Bank. Julie and the Tank Bank travelled up and down the UK raising funds to build more tanks, which became seen as the way that Britain was going to win the war. Other films that are featured throughout the exhibition include the Glasgow Tramwaymen being signed up to head off as a PALS battalion to the front, and also as a film of the Glasgow women tram workers who were obviously filling the men's roles as they went away to fight at the front. We're now entering the final section of the exhibition, and this starts with a single page from Haig's extensive manuscript war diary, which he kept throughout the war, and sent pages home to his wife. There are pages from the diary throughout the exhibition, and this is perhaps one of the most poignant. He announces that the armistice came into force at 11 a.m. Obviously, it took a long time for things to return to normal, and the effect of the war continued to impact upon Scotland and all of the competent nations for many, many more months, years, and throughout the 20th century. We've also, opposite Haig's diary, got a panel with a range of the people that you'll see throughout the exhibition. There are almost 40 people altogether, so we've only been able to sort of tell the final story of what happened to a small number of them. But you'll see from this that they're kind of representative of what happened in terms of statistics with the war, that there are more survivors than there were people who were killed in the war. However, I think that statistic is a fairly bare fact, you know, compared to the impact that the war actually had.
We hope this audio tour gives you an idea of how the First World War touched the lives of ordinary Scotsmen and women. If you would like to find out more, please visit our Experiences of War web feature at digital.nls/great-war. Thank you for listening.